Imagine that you're in your favorite store. You see an employee that's having a problem putting something heavy on a shelf, so you help them out. Does that mean you're now an employee of that store? Will they pay you, give you benefits because of what you just did? Right, of course not. Sounds ridiculous. Yet this is a scenario that's playing out in law enforcement, as local law enforcement is receiving the same rights and protections that federal law enforcement has when they're, it's called being cross-deputized. This is a greater situation where someone who was unjustly imprisoned is being denied legal recourse against the local law enforcement who caused that to happen. Joining us to explore this case is litigation counsel with New Civil Liberties Alliance, Casey Norman. How are you today, Casey?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
And a little more about this case, along with the work of New Civil Liberties Alliance, ncla.org is the website. We have that at our homepage. I gave the superficial introduction to this case, but dig a little deeper. What came about that caused this dilemma that the NCLA is filing an amicus brief on?
Sure. So this case is about a lot of things, but I think at bottom it's really about accountability, as you just touched on. And I know we only have about 10 minutes, so I won't take you through all of the facts of this case. But in a nutshell, a St. Paul, Minnesota police officer, this is the defendant in the case, her name is Officer Waker, he essentially fabricated evidence and concocted this, you know, far-reaching sex trafficking conspiracy that ultimately led to numerous innocent individuals being imprisoned or charged with involvement in this sex trafficking conspiracy, and then being put behind bars waiting. In this case, the petitioner, she was behind bars waiting for her charges to be dropped because she was innocent, but she was imprisoned for 2 years along with many other innocent people who ultimately were determined to be innocent. And it was found that this police officer had just made up this conspiracy and knowingly, you know, implicated these innocent individuals. And the question really in this case is, what do you do about that? When you find that a law enforcement officer violates your rights, you know, patently, without question, violated rights, is there a way to hold that officer accountable? And the complicating factor in this case really is that the officer in this case was cross-deputized, which means even though she was a state police officer at the time of the misconduct, she'd also been cross-deputized with very limited federal authority as well, because she was assisting with a federal joint task force. And the problem here is that a lot of these courts are saying, oh, because you are cross-deputized, you can no longer be held liable as a state actor, as a state police officer. And for a lot of people, in a lot of cases, really the only way to go after a bad actor, like a state law enforcement officer, is through Section 1983, which provides for a remedy against bad actors acting under state law. But these courts are kind of removing that remedy from a case like this, which is just egregious and kind of nonsensical.
The Supreme Court, I was reading in 2022, ruled in, it was Egbert versus Boule, I guess it's pronounced B-O-U-L-E, rendered damages, actions against federal officials largely unavailable to victims of constitutional violations. Does that ruling contain any clarification which keeps local law enforcement away from this beneficial position that federal law enforcement has?
Yes, I'm glad you brought up Egbert v. Boule. That's kind of the other side of this case. So for those listeners who aren't familiar, if a federal officer violates your constitutional rights, for instance, there used to be a remedy that you could pursue called Bivens action. And Bivens was an old Supreme Court case that basically said, you know, even though Congress hasn't specifically passed a law that says you can go after federal officers, you know, this is an implied right that we as the Supreme Court are creating, and you can go after them if they violate your rights. But then the case that you just mentioned, Egbert v. Boule, that case severely limited and almost overruled Bivens. So basically, if your rights are violated by a federal law enforcement officer, you have very, very limited options for getting a remedy, getting a relief, even if the rights violation is just obvious and unquestionable. And so that's why this case is really important and interesting, because the courts are treating state and local police officers, like the officer in this case, as though they are purely federal officers. And because of the case you mentioned, Egbert v. Boule, if they're a purely federal officer, there's almost no way that a person is going to be able to, you know, pursue relief and hold this individual accountable. It's really only state and local officers that you can hold accountable, which is why this issue is so important.
So when a local law enforcement is cross-deputized and doing cooperation efforts with the federal, so they're coming under that umbrella, does who is paying that local officer come into play with anything as far as the law is concerned? If I'm getting paid as a local officer, why am I not still a local officer?
Exactly. That is a very good question. And the fact of the matter is that, for instance, in this case, Officer Waker, the defendant, she's completely remained a state police officer. She's still being paid by the state, you know, police department. She reported to, you know, a state sergeant within the police department. She was completely 100% a state police officer. She maintained her position. And the only difference is that, you know, part of her position was this supplemental federal authority to assist with the federal task force as well. But it's not as though these state police officers are suddenly being transformed or converted into federal agents. That's not at all the case. They're still state police officers, but they just have this, you know, additional supplemental power and function as well.
So we're Casey Norman, who is litigation counsel with the New Civil Liberties Alliance, ncla.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Unless something has updated from the news I was able to find doing background, this officer, this local officer, is still gainfully employed, is she not?
Yes, it's actually incredible, but since the misconduct that was alleged in this case, I think she's actually been promoted. She's earning a six-figure salary. They're working for the same police department, incredibly enough.
With the lower court's ruling as they have with this issue, how big are the roadblocks in front of what would be more common sense justice, certainly to the layperson, if not the courts themselves? How difficult is it, based upon what the lower courts have decided, to make better sense out of all this and put things more in a righteous way for civil rights to take the precedent rather than benefits of local law enforcement?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we're seeking in the Supreme Court is for the Supreme Court to do just that, to clarify that some of these lower courts are absolutely getting it wrong and that what they're doing is just removing any hope of a remedy, any means of holding these bad actors accountable. And luckily, this isn't all courts. You know, only certain regions, only circuit courts of appeals have been holding in this way, which basically just says, you know, if your rights are violated, tough luck. There's nothing you can do. But not all courts are ruling that way. So there's a big split among the courts, which is why we're really hopeful the Supreme Court will take this case and rule definitively, hey, this is wrong. There has to be a remedy when your rights are violated. These state police officers are still state police officers. So we're going to apply Section 1983, which is enacted specifically to hold bad actors who are acting under state law accountable. So that's the clearest, you know, path to a fix of the situation that I can see at the moment.
I know the history of the Supreme Court is obviously voluminous, and that's the understatement. But has the court ruled on anything to this situation, anything a close cousin to it, that could be used as a means to say to the court, well, you decided on this case, shouldn't that apply to that case?
Yeah, so I think what we argue in our amicus brief essentially is related to Section 1983, which is the civil rights law that Congress passed to act as a remedy in cases just like this when state actors violate rights. And there's ample Supreme Court case law that holds that Section 1983 is supposed to be interpreted and applied very broadly. It's supposed to protect constitutional rights in any situation where they're violated by someone who's using, to any degree, state authority or state law to back his bad actions. And I think in this case, you know, we're dealing with a state police officer who in many ways was exercising her state police officer authority when she committed all of this misconduct. So, you know, the mere fact that she was also federally cross-deputized at the time should not negate the fact that she was also acting under color of state law. And there is a remedy for that, which the Supreme Court has held in a number, like I said, in a number of other opinions.
Does the officer's misconduct play any role in this case as far as what the Supreme Court decides? Or is that something they have to be blind to and they're just looking at what's in front of them in the text of the law?
I think, misconduct definitely plays a role because when you're looking at whether someone's rights were violated, you know, whether there was a Fourth Amendment violation, you got to look, like, what did the officer do? What was their conduct? What was the context of the situation? So I think what courts should be doing is absolutely looking at the specifics of, you know, the specific facts, the specific conduct, you know, the details of their cross-deputization, what role were they actually playing in assisting a federal task force. That is what courts should be doing, and that's what we're hoping the Supreme Court is going to say as well, because it shouldn't just be, you know, we're turning a blind eye to the facts and just looking at, the federal authority under the cross-deputization agreement. It should be, you know, the specific facts should play a major role.
And certainly I think we all want to see the best in fairness and civil rights for Ms. Mohammed, but is this the case, too, where, like it or not, we're going to have to see the legislative branch come into this and fine-tune the laws that are collectively creating the situation?
I honestly, that would help a lot. Like I mentioned when we were discussing Egbert v. Boole, that recent Supreme Court case, which really, really narrowed the possibility of getting relief from federal officers who commit violations of your rights. If Congress were to pass a law that's like Section 1983, but again, Section 1983 applies only to state actors and not federal, but if we could see an act from Congress that applies to federal actors, I think that would really, you know, help ameliorate the situation, because right now it's almost as though if you're a federal officer and also a bad actor who's violating rights, you're almost certainly going to be found immune from liability, which is not something that should be the case in our system of governance. Yeah.
No, to say the least, certainly a very interesting case, which sounds like it applies to an individual. But when you find the details out, if you go to ncla.org, the website for the New Civil Liberties Alliance, read the amicus brief in the background on this case, you'll find out that this decision, should the Supreme Court take it, is going to have some very far-reaching effects, hopefully for the much better versus the story that you heard in this specific instance. Again, the website for the New Civil Liberties Alliance, ncla.org. She is litigation counsel with the New Civil Liberties Alliance, Casey Norman. Casey, thanks for bringing this case to our attention. Certainly something worthy of support for doing what's right and protecting civil rights for all of us. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.